Welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, Episode 18, The Second Continental Congress. So last week we spent some time talking about one of our first British officers that we are going to do a character study on, and that was Thomas Gage. This week we're going to talk about the probably one of the most important political bodies of the Revolution, and that is the Continental Congress. So as a quick recap, let's talk about where we are when we started our story to now. The first several episodes were all about the Acts of Parliament and how they angered the colonists. Then we had ourselves a massacre in Boston. We continued our story by talking about a little party that they had and involved tea. And then we got ourselves to the First Continental Congress. The First Continental Congress was radical in the way that this was the first time that we had seen a collective representative government in the United States. They had never seen this before. Most people who lived in the colonies had never even been privy to knowing what it was like to have a representative government where they lived, because the only representative government that they were used to was Parliament 3,000 miles away. And then, of course, the fact that the Parliament never actually listened to the needs and desires of the average person, they cared more about what benefited the British Isle. So now we have ourselves a representative body not far away from most of the colonies in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Now remember, the First Continental Congress was not gearing up for war. They were still trying to find a way to coexist with English Parliament. They wanted English Parliament to redact any of the taxes levied against the colonies that the colonies did not themselves have a chance to vote on. So in September and October of 1774, the representative body of the colonies makes two important decisions. First, they're going to stop the import from Britain of any taxable items. Second, they are going to seek an agreement with Parliament that they repeal any taxes levied against the colonies that the colonies themselves have not had a chance to vote on themselves. The final thing that they agree on, and now this really has nothing to do politically, but they make the important decision to give this time to set in, and that they will reconvene in May of 1775 to discuss the idea of stopping all exports to Britain from the colonies. So now as we approach the deadline, which was May 10th of 1775, for the Second Continental Congress, the tone in the colonies has changed. We have gone from a group of individuals who are of a like mind and belief that the colonies in America should and could govern themselves, and that taxation without representation is illegal. But as we approach May of 1775, we now have an armed rebellion on our hands. Lexington and Concord has shown the world that the patriots in America are going to stand up to the British and fight for their freedom by any means necessary. So it's May 10th, 1775, and the Continental Congress is going to meet for the first time in about 8 months. Now, the Continental Congress has moved itself to what we now know as Independence Hall. It was mainly just a reconvening of the First Continental Congress. It had many of the original 56 delegates, with a few noteworthy additions. For example, Benjamin Franklin of Pennsylvania. He has returned from England, where he was an ambassador for the colonies to the King of England. But after being shunned from court because of the action of his countrymen, Benjamin Franklin returns to America, where he will decide to help fight for the cause of freedom. Another new face is John Hancock of Massachusetts. Also, Peyton Randolph of Virginia was elected president of the Congress, but he's recalled back to the state to preside over the House of Burgesses. He is replaced by a young planter by the name of Thomas Jefferson. Henry Middleton of South Carolina was nominated, but he declines the presidency. So on May 24th, John Hancock is made the official president of the Continental Congress. Now, back in episode 12, when we talked about the First Continental Congress, I had mentioned that Georgia had not sent any representatives. And initially, this time, they hadn't either. But Georgia will hold its own provincial congress on July 4th of 1775, and they'll decide on the 8th to send delegates. They arrived in Philadelphia on July 20th. Funny enough, Georgia did have an unofficial representative. Lyman Hall was admitted on May 13th to the Congress as a delegate from the parish of St. John's in the colony of Georgia. Now, it's important to remember that the First Continental Congress was not looking at the independence route. They simply wanted fair representation and a way to regulate their own taxes. But now that we are in May of 1775, and blood has been spilled at Lexington and Concord, and now the Continental Congress has to look very hard at independence, because there is a very slim chance that they will be able to come back from this and become productive members of the British Empire, nor do I think that most of them would want to. Many believe that America can and should rule itself. But the problem is that the British government is not just going to say, "Oh, America, you want to be free? Well, sure, we'll let you be free now." They're going to have to fight for it. And, of course, they have no military to speak of. The army that's besieging Boston, that's got the British soldiers stuck on that island, is a group of militia. How long will they stay before they decide to go back to their farms? Or how long will it be before the British can bring in a large enough force to break the militia lines and free Boston? And the militia has no heavy guns. The heavy guns would stop British ships from dropping off supplies, but they have no way to stop the British ships from bringing in all the supplies and troops that the island needs. So they're the people that are besieged in the city, along with the soldiers, have regular deposits of food. They have a way to get water. They have a way to get supplies. So they really have nothing to worry about. Right now, they just have a bunch of angry farmers on a hilltop overlooking the city with no way to stop them. Another problem is, of course, that American militias have been capturing forts and arsenals, but they're doing it in an ad hoc way. They're just taking anything British. What the Continental Congress needs is a professional army that can stand up to the British regulars. So with our first act of Congress, they decide to form a Continental Army. And what does every army need? Well, a commander, of course. Some of the men that wanted the job were John Jay from New York, or even John Hancock. But it's John Adams who recommends a tall yet quiet Virginia planter, a representative of both the First and Second Continental Congress, a veteran of the French and Indian War, a colonel to the Virginia militia. Well, of course, I'm speaking about George Washington. George Washington was a very capable officer and a very experienced officer. He led the Virginia Provincial Militia during the Seven Years' War. He was very accustomed to the British style of fighting. And for John Adams, this was a political move. Most of what has been going on has been happening in Massachusetts. It's been happening in the New England colonies. So why would the southern colonies want to get involved in what would be considered a New England matter? But if you elected a Virginia man as the commander of the new Continental Army, then you were welcoming the southern colonies to join up in the fight and showing them that this is a united front. It doesn't matter who leads. It's just that we all do this together. Part of me thinks, though, that Washington may have been searching for his role in the Continental Army, mainly because every day of the Continental Congress, he showed up wearing his Virginia military uniform. Coincidence? Let's go with maybe. Washington receives his appointment in the Continental Congress session of June 16, 1775. He will stand in place, and he will say to his fellow delegates, "Mr. President, though I am truly sensible of the high honor done to me in this appointment, yet I feel great distress from a consciousness that my abilities and military experiences may not be equal to the extensive and important trust. However, as the Congress desire it, I will enter upon the monumentous duty and exert every power I possess in their service and for the support of the glorious cause. I beg they will accept my most cordial thanks for the distinguished testimony of their appropriation. Once he is appointed Commander-in-Chief, he has to speed himself to Boston. By all intents and purposes, the Revolutionary War has officially begun. There has been bloodshed in Lexington and Concord. An entire British army is held up in Boston. The Continental Congress has agreed to form a Continental Army and put that powerful responsibility in the hands of George Washington. We've had the spark of revolution. We have the army. We have the leader. There is no turning back now. The Americans are going to get their independence by hook or by crook. But they have to make one last-ditch effort to seek a peaceful resolution. And on July 8th, they send the Olive Branch Petition. The Olive Branch Petition was signed by 48 delegates, and all it was a simple proclamation sent to the king stating that the American colonies wanted to seek a peaceful resolution to the hostilities that are currently going on in New England. The king will receive it and then read it out loud in Parliament on October 26th, 1775. It will be followed by this announcement. It has now become the part of wisdom and of clemency to put a speedy end to these disorders by the most decisive exertions. Now, the Continental Congress, by all intents and purposes, was a government for the colonies. They sent ambassadors to foreign nations, they appointed generals, they raised troops, they obtained loans, issued money, and took care of the distribution of funds. Now, of course, the Congress couldn't levy taxes. Why could they levy taxes? I mean, this is the whole reason we were fighting in the first place. The states were having issues with taxes being levied against them. So they had to ask for money and for troops from each individual state. This caused all kinds of problems, and it's going to happen from each state over various times during the Revolutionary War, but for some reason, one state or another is upset about something that happens, and they threaten to withhold money and troops that they were supposed to be sending for use in the Continental Army. Now, the issue of independence will actually be put forward by the Virginia delegation on May 15, 1776. It would, of course, have to be delayed several weeks as to gain support in all 13 colonies. But on July 2, 1776, the Congress will approve the resolution. They will then make a formal announcement on July 4, 1776, the day we know as Independence Day. Now we're going to get into the Declaration of Independence and Thomas Jefferson writing it and everything that goes into that when we get to that portion of our story. But because we're trying to keep this in a timeline-based system, I'm going to hold off on that for now. Congress now began to work on setting up the Articles of Confederation. Once again, it's another section of our story that I'm going to talk about more in depth when we get to it. But just know, now that we have an independent nation, you have to come up with a new government. The problem was with the representation issue. The use of representation based on population favored large states, and it's Thomas Jefferson that suggests a two-man Senate from each state. It would take over a year, but on November 15, 1777, the Articles of Confederation are approved. And Virginia, of course, is the first to sign. They sign on December 16, 1777, with Maryland being the last to sign on March 1, 1781. The next day, the new Congress of Confederation met and finished out the war. The Second Continental Congress is a vast topic, and we are going to reference everything that happens in the Continental Congress many times as we continue on going through our storyline. We still have to declare independence, we have to set up a new government, we have to organize a treaty with France. We have many more times where we are going to talk about the Second Continental Congress. So for those that thought that they may have been gypped on this episode because I kind of went over a brief history of the Continental Congress, fear not, because we are going to be talking about the Second Continental Congress repeatedly as we continue on through the timeline of the American Revolution. That's going to do it for this week. And in lieu of a book recommendation this week, I would actually like to take a moment and call attention to the show's Facebook page. If you go to the American Revolution Podcast on Facebook, you'll find that I've set up a Facebook page that is open to the public. And you guys can ask any questions that you have about anything that we've talked about in previous episodes. Or if you have questions that I can answer in a future episode, I'll be glad to do so as well. One last thing I would like to call attention to before we end for the week is the rating system on iTunes. iTunes does a rating system of 1 to 5 stars for how well you like something. And the more 5-star ratings a person has, the more likely they are to show up when people are searching through iTunes and looking for new podcasts to listen to. So any of those loyal listeners out there, if they wouldn't mind just going into iTunes and just giving me a 5-star rating, it would really help get my show out to more people, and thus I can build a bigger following. I do very much enjoy doing this show, and I don't get any kind of value out of it except for the appreciation that the stories that I talk about and the information that I give out is appreciated by people that are listening. So whenever you get a chance, just go to iTunes, give me a 5-star review. It'll be much appreciated. So that's going to end everything for this week. Next week, we are going to continue on with our story, and we are going to talk about a second major event that happens on the same day as the reconvening of the Second Continental Congress on May 10, 1775. Now, I could tell you what it is, but I want to try and draw those people in with the mystery of what happens on the morning of May 10th, 1775 in upstate New York. So everyone, enjoy your week, and always remember, you have to keep your powder dry.